Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Richard Rossi Live. I'm very, very excited to have on today's show Dale Gerdnick. As many of you know, this show started in Pittsburgh on 101.5 WPIT, and thanks to Blog Talk Radio, we have an international audience. But what I find with my international audience is so many of them, like me, are Steelers fans. I grew up in Pittsburgh, and Dale is really, in my opinion, an expert on the Steelers. He's put in a lot of time researching the Steelers, researching the stories of the Steelers. He has two wonderful books out, and these books really cover territory that other books have not covered. He really did the work to talk to a lot of the Steelers. He has two books, Tales from the Pittsburgh Steelers Sideline, a collection of the greatest Steelers stories ever told, and a second book, Pittsburgh Steelers Glory Days. So we'll be back in 20 seconds with Dale, and he is actually live at a press conference. A free agency starts now on the hour, and he is there for the Steelers press conference and gracious enough to chat with us right before that gets underway. So I'll be back in a few moments with Dale Gerdnick. And thanks for tuning in today to Richard Rossi Live. Well, welcome everyone to Richard Rossi Live, and so Dale, how are things looking there at the press conference for the Steelers there?
Well, people are starting to file in here and get ready for it. Starts at 1:30. We're going to talk with Mike Mitchell, the new safety that the Steelers signed. He'll be replacing Ryan Clark, who was not re-signed this year. Ryan was a unrestricted free agent. And a free agency actually began at 4 p.m. Tuesday. There was a lot of action yesterday, last night, and this morning. And the Steelers have signed several of their own players who were free agents. But this Mitchell, he was with the Carolina Panthers for a few years, and he is a new player coming to their team. They're going to get a lot more new players because they have lost quite a few already with guys they let go and also people that they just didn't re-sign and signed elsewhere. So,
Well, it'll be really exciting to see Mike Mitchell and, you know, how he does with pairing with Polamalu, huh?
Right, that'll be a good that'll be interesting. What the Steelers wanted to do there primarily was certainly this kid is just coming into his own. I mean, he's 26 years old, and he's really starting to come around now. He had his best season last year with Carolina on a very good defense, and his four interceptions that he had last year, heck, that would have led the Steelers easily. So.
Wow.
They're not a
so it should be a good
signing for them, and they wanted to get a little bit younger in the secondary with Ike Taylor and Troy, both over 30 years old. You know, they wanted to get another young guy in there.
Well, your wonderful books took me back to a childhood that I feel really lucky, you know, to have grown up in Pittsburgh in the 70s with the dynasty. And, you know, your great books, and by the way, if you're listening, these books are on Amazon and in some of the Barnes & Nobles, particularly in Pittsburgh, but, of course, on Amazon, Tales from the Pittsburgh Steelers Sidelines and Pittsburgh Steelers Glory Days by Dale Gerdnick, both these books. But Do you talk about the 70s and how, you know, kind of segueing from free agency, how pivotal it was, you know, the drafts, you know, like in 74 and everything. I mean, do you think that's still the greatest years in terms of the selection that put together those dynasties?
Well, you can't. The key difference is that you can't keep together a team, as you said, with free agency and such. There's no way to keep a team that good together for that long. So you see these teams making moves like New England, for example, signing Darrell Revis to a one-year contract, $12 million or whatever it was. I mean, they think they can win now if they get a player of that caliber on defense, and with the other, you know, Brady, his clock's ticking, just like some of the other quarterbacks that came around in that area. Peyton Manning, even Ben now's over 30 years old. So, you know, it's a business for now, not building to the future. They've always felt that way with the Steelers anyway, that they're not rebuilt, they're just kind of reloading. And even though they were 8-8 the past two seasons, they were only one game from making the playoffs both years. And, you know, that's all you can ask, really, is to be in a position to get in there, and then, you know, everybody's 0-0 when they start. So that's what they tried to do, and that's what they're trying to do now. With they're going to make some of these signings, and then in the draft in May. But you talk about those 70s teams. I mean, my goodness, think of what the salaries on that team would have been with all those guys later in their careers. You know, it would have been extremely difficult to keep even a handful of them for that long time.
Yeah, I'm so grateful to grow up in that era as a boy in Pittsburgh and watch their evolution from a team. I remember as a little boy how people kind of put us down, the Steelers, you know, sucked, and I remember as a little boy that just how hard the fans were on the whole team and on the whole quarterback debate. As a little boy, I remember it was, you know, should we play Bradshaw or Joe Gilliam or Hanratty, and I actually can remember, you know, being in the stands and in the crowd being just so hard on Bradshaw and saying he was stupid and he was this and he was that, and then all of a sudden the immaculate reception happened, and I don't know if it's my nostalgia of being a boy, Dale, but it seemed like that play, and you write about it in your wonderful books, that immaculate reception to me was magical and seemed to be a turning point. I mean, is that, you know, nostalgia, or was it really the fulcrum that seemed to turn our fortunes then?
No, it definitely did. And what I think what it did to two things. First of all, it started what had to be the most amazing rivalry going back then, the Raiders and the Steelers. Mm-hmm. It really ignited that. And even though the Steelers didn't really, you know, do much the next season, that really 72 really started them going. And if not for a fake punt against the Miami Dolphins, that the punter ran for a lot of yardage and then they scored a touchdown, the Steelers might have played in the Super Bowl that year. So, I mean, it was just really close. They had a lot of things go their way that year, but they only had three regular season losses. Then you beat the Raiders in the playoffs, one of the favorites in the league. And, you know, of course, the Dolphins were in the midst of their big run also, 17-0.
And, yeah, they were fantastic.
Right. I mean, that's an incredible year for several teams. And then, you know, the draft choices is how the Steelers built those teams. There were very few, first of all, around those early years, there were very few remaining from pre-Chuck Knoll. He only kept, you know, four or five guys over an extended period of time who were there before he arrived. He got rid of everybody, basically, when he got there. And that's, you know, he said, look, you guys aren't any good. You don't win any games. I've watched some of your films. You can't play the game very well. We're going to try to start over here. So that's what they did. They built it up through the draft. Joe Green, Terry Bradshaw, Franco Harris in 1972, Jack Ham was brought in, the big 74 draft, where they had four Hall of Famers, Lynn Swann, John Stallworth, Mike Webster, Mel Blount, those guys. I mean, Mike Webster. My goodness, these are the Jack Lambert. I mean, all those players came in those early 70s, and they were already, you know, they were already building the team. So that's really the, to me, 72 was the start of it, and that certainly spurred interest in the city and around the area. Young fans like us, I mean, you know, we weren't even teenagers yet, and we're already excited about the sport. So it was pretty amazing, I thought.
Yeah, I remember I was 9 when it happened, Dale, and I was watching it live, and it was so magical. I can remember, you know, Bradshaw going back, and I think it bounced off with Jack Tatum's hands, and then I couldn't see the ball. We had an old black and white set, and I was like, what happened to the ball? And then when Franco came running down the side, I even remember controversy, you know, as a kid and you're in school and we're talking about it, and some people thought it was fake. You know, someone tossed another ball to him from the sidelines. Do you remember that kind of speculation about what really happened?
Oh, nobody knew what was going on right then. And certainly, well, back then they had the rule where two players from the same team couldn't touch the ball. So if Fuqua would have ruled that Fuqua touched it, mm-hmm. then it would have been over. But I don't know, the way it flew backward like that to Franco, I mean, Tatum had to hit it, in my book.
Yeah, I love in your book, Pittsburgh Steelers Glory Days, as well as Tales from the Pittsburgh Steelers Sidelines, but you talk about these top 20 games and moments, and I remember the first Super Bowl, I think it was in 75, I believe, because I was 12, and the Vikings, against the Vikings, and I remember the prior year, the Dolphins had played them with that wonderful team, Larry Zonka and all those guys. Now here we were, and it was, I mean, after feeling like losers for all those years, and my dad was a guitar player, and we, you know, didn't have a lot of luxuries at the time, and he was like, we're buying a Kellard set. I got teased because I was one of the kids that didn't have a Kellard TV set, and he said, we're going to get a set to watch this, you know, in Kellard, and I remember just the magic of that Kellard TV set and watching them against, I think it was Fran Tarkenton and the Vikings.
Right.
And when we won, oh, my God, talk about ecstatic. What do you remember about that first Super Bowl win? I know you talk a lot about it in your book, your top 20 moments.
Yeah, it was top 20, you know, with 6 Super Bowls and all the AFC championship games and things like that. It was easy to fill up 20 games, let me tell you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that game, I actually watched it with my family. We were at my cousin's house, and my cousin Mel was a big Vikings fan. I don't know why, but he seemed to always, you know, have his own view on things. He went to Colorado for college, so he didn't like any of the teams around here, any of the colleges around here. Pitt or Penn State, and then, you know, then he's rooting for the Vikings, and I thought, what the heck is wrong with this guy? And I'm only, you know, 15 years old, 14 years old, so I didn't really, you know, it's not like I'm going to argue with him. But the Steelers beat him pretty handily. I mean, they had like 15 yards rushing or something like that, the Vikings, and the Steelers had a safety and another touchdown. The only way the Vikings scored was a blocked punt for a touchdown. I mean, they just didn't do anything. The great Fran Tarkenton in the middle of a run of going 0-4 in the Super Bowl. So I just remember being able to cheer in front of my cousin Mel as he was so dejected. That was the best. And Franco, of course, 158 yards rushing and a touchdown.
That was wonderful. I still have my coffee cup with the headline from the Post-Gazette on it. And it seemed like such a family back then, and you mentioned how the team stays together back in those days, you know, from the chief on down. Shortly after that, and this is a little personal, but my dad went in the hospital. He suffered from a mental health bipolar disorder and had a breakdown, and it was I was devastated as a kid. And lo and behold, the chief, Art Rooney, because we were somewhat known in the area musically. We played as a family in all the clubs and bars and stuff. Art Rooney came to visit my dad in the hospital, the chief, with a cigar, and brought a bunch of the big Steeler players, and you know, Swan and Stallworth and a bunch of these guys. And Jack Lambert used to come over our house for guitar lessons from my dad, and some of these guys, you know, they'd come in my home. And a bunch of the guys came to see my dad and were, you know, worried about, because I was not taking this well. I was in kind of bad shape because, you know, love my dad, and I was devastated. What's happening to my dad? And a bunch of these Super Bowl Steeler guys signed all these autographs for me and, you know, wrote notes that it's everything's going to be okay. And it was such a feeling of a family then. I mean, as kids, we went, you know, over some of these guys' homes, and they came over our home. And it seemed like the Rooneys had a family touch to it. Do you get that feeling when you look back at that team in those days that it was a family of players that stayed together?
Sure. And even since the chief passed, I mean, with Dan still around, it's totally like that. I mean, he's in the locker room all the time after every game, shaking hands with the players, talking with them while they're, you know, while they're getting changed after a game. I mean, he's right there. He's in the, and he's on the practice field all the time. Not that, you know, I don't know if it'll change when he passes with his son Art II in charge, but, you know, and Art pretty much runs the team now. He's the team president, but I don't want to say pretty much. I mean, he runs the team, but Dan is still around now that he's back from Ireland, and, you know, it's still a family situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's really and the players will tell you that, too, for the most part. You won't find – I mean, I'm sure there are some you know, that maybe feel they didn't get the right situation for them. But overall, I mean, I think they feel that way as well.
Mm. It's interesting, too, in your second book, Tales from the Pittsburgh Steelers Sidelines. And by the way, listeners, these books are on Amazon, and I know a lot of you are Steelers fans. And in all the different cities listening, we have Steeler bars out here where Steeler fans in every city. This is a great book. But in the second book, Tales from the Pittsburgh Steelers Sideline, you interview players and get them telling stories. That's a great idea. How did that idea come to you? Were you trying to get like a different angle than the typical Steeler book on that one?
Well, on both of them, I really wanted to. So with the first one, that's why I tied it in with the fans who were at some of these games, or certainly at least watched the games, and kind of how the Steelers were ingrained into their lives. And then the second one, you know, has to be different from that and the others. There are so many books out there. Players have written books. Andy Russell has written 4 books. I mean, you know, so, you know, you'd figure who's going to have better insight than those guys. So I figured, why not go to the people, you know, who have that kind of insight? So I talk to a lot of players, and they're telling me stories about themselves and even other players after that. So, you know, it was a very interesting. I enjoyed every minute of it. It was very after I wrote the first one, I thought, geez, there's no way I'm going to ever do another book. It was just too time consuming and just really was a killer. But, you know, I got an offer to do another book, and I had a pretty strict deadline on it. They gave me an 8-week deadline.
Like, wow.
That was impossible. I mean, I finished it in 10 weeks, so I hope it's as good as it could be. I could have used more time for more research, but, you know, I got a representative amount of guys, and the stories are pretty good. So I was happy with it, and I think Steeler fans will be happy with it as well.
Well, thank you for all of us Steeler fans for writing this book and interviewing all these greats that you interview for the book: Andy Russell, Rocky Blyer, Elsie Greenwood, Dwight White, a lot of these guys getting to tell their stories. And how do you think the 70s team would, you know, if we did some sort of virtual time machine and they could stack up against the current Steelers, is that hard to compare apples and oranges, or do you have, what do you think about that?
Well, it's tough to compare. I mean, the rules are different now, changed primarily because a lot of those Steeler teams and players. But I think some of the better Steeler teams from the past, 1978, I guess, is considered, you know, they only had two losses won the third Super Bowl. I think they could, you know, they could beat any team of any era as far as I'm concerned. They still had the great defensive players, but they also were a pretty terrific offensive team.
Mm-hmm.
Bradshaw, Harris, and Blyer, and I mean, it's just, you look at those guys and they could score anyway, and they could beat you just by playing defense. Heck, there's a lot of people that think that 1976 team was as good as any out there.
Yeah, I remember those teams and the Cowboys. Yeah. That was when we just made mincemeat out of the Cowboys in those two Super Bowls, huh?
Right, but the 76 team, they lost in the playoffs to the Raiders 24-7 or 21-7, something like that, because they had no running backs. Franco was hurt, Rocky Blyer was hurt, and Frenchie Fuqua was hurt. They only had Reggie Harrison, who was a rookie maybe or a second-year player, and so that, you know, they just really didn't have the offense that they had yet in 78 and 79 where they could make up for that. Defensively, that defensive team had like 9 shutouts that season. So, I mean, it was a great team, but, you know, they didn't have with all those guys injured, it just was too much to overcome.
Mm.
So, but those teams generally, I think, can hang with any of the great teams of any era.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, sometimes when I look back at childhood, I wonder, did I make things more mythic in my mind than they were? But then when I see the footage of, you know, the Super Bowls against the Cowboys, and wow, those passes from Bradshaw and Swan, you know, Swan's ballet leaps into the air. It seems like if you got the ball anywhere near Swan or Stallworth, they were pulling that thing in, weren't they?
They were terrific, and you know, Stallworth was the type of receiver that people are looking at now, a big guy who's physical and can run. I mean, you know, 6'3", whatever he was, 6'2", 6'3", rangy, could go up for a ball, but fast, strong, you know, don't turn your head or he'll knock you down as well, you know. So, I mean, it's really... And on defense, my goodness, they beat people up. I mean, they just physically dominated. It was just
incredible.
Really,
what a defense. Yeah, I remember Jack Lambert coming over for guitar lessons with my dad. My dad was hard on the students if they didn't practice, and there was a week where Jack was busy and didn't practice, and my dad did his typical, you know, you better practice, and I can tell you weren't working on this. And my dad said Jack gave him a look that scared him so much. he said to him, he said, "I might not be able to play this guitar, but don't you, I'm one hell of a linebacker, and don't you ever forget."
right.
And him and Jack Ham, wow. And the Steel Curtain, what a defense, huh?
It was incredible. The things they could do, I mean, Mel Blount, I mean, if there's a, you know, you're talking about a guy 6'4", 220 pounds, he could run like a deer. I mean, he had, you know, they talk about him that you might have thought you had it beat, so the quarterback throws the ball long, and in two strides he's caught up to the guy, and then because he was so big also, he could go up and get the ball, and the receiver thought it was right in his hands. I mean, you know, that's just, to me, an athlete like that is just comes along once in a while. And they had, you know, 10 or 12 on them, 10 or 12 of them on those teams. So.
And you got to interview him for your Tales from the Pittsburgh Steelers sideline, huh?
Yeah, he's a good guy, and he's still in the area. He runs that home for, you know, wayward youth, I guess. And he really is the type of person that you, you know, you want being in charge of kids like this. I mean, he's tough enough, but yet he knows, you know, what it takes and how to keep these kids interested and out of trouble. So that's what he does.
Yeah, they really cared about the community. And what's your thoughts? This last season it seemed like, and we have Steeler fans listening from many different cities that love the Steelers all over the place, and it seemed like the feeling I got from a lot of my Steeler fan friends that they were pretty upset at the bad start last season, and then it seemed to come together a little bit. What was your take on the last season?
Well, they started off with some injuries and some unproven players, and they just weren't able to come together quickly enough. It was just really, you know, that was the whole thing. I mean, they lost to some bad teams, though, unfortunately, and, you know, that made it difficult to rebound from that. So you start 0-4, and, you know, that's really not what you want to do. But then they finished strong anyway. So
yeah, they sure did. I almost hesitate to say this, Dale, because I'm a Pittsburgher and love my hometown and everything, but I sometimes felt like the fans were almost brutal with the team. I mean, is it this last season? I mean, I knew a lot of people, they were like off with Tomlin's head, and I remember as a little boy, you know, being kind of sensitive to, I mean, people were so hard on Bradshaw before it all came together, and I remember, you know, in the bars, my dad and I played guitars as a, you know, I played rhythm and dad played lead, and we go in these bars and play. I remember some of the people saying he was stupid, he was retarded, I guess just because he had a southern accent. Now, of course, he's a very successful commentator. He's been one of the all-time greats. And do you ever feel like sometimes our city, it's almost like a love-hate, where sometimes they're just a little rough on the team?
I think every place is like that, really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think. Well, the press conference is starting already.
Okay, well, let me let you go because I know you need to focus on the press conference, and we're actually only got about a minute left to go. But I'm so grateful that you've been with us, Dale, and the books are both on Amazon, Tales from the Pittsburgh Steelers Sideline, Pittsburgh Steelers Glory Day. And I'll let you go, Dale. Have a fun time at the press conference, and thank you so much for being with us. God bless you and your family.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So if you're listening in, we have literally a minute left. But, wow, what a wonderful 30-minute interview with Dale. And it was a real treat for me. As you all know, I am from Pittsburgh and love Pittsburgh sports. I recently wrote and directed a film on Roberto Clemente, baseball's last hero. And I maybe one day I'll do a film about – I have a idea to do a film about a boy growing up in the 70s in Pittsburgh and how the Immaculate Reception and those Super Bowl Steelers teams were so magical. It's one of the films in my head to do at some point. But anyways, thank you for all you Steeler fans that were excited about the show today. You can get Dale's books at Barnes & Noble, and probably a little easier just to go on Amazon and get them. His first book, Pittsburgh Steelers Glory Days, talks about the top 20 games or moments through the eyes of fans. And Dale's second book is Tales from the Pittsburgh Steelers Sideline, a collection of the greatest Steeler stories ever told. Wow, a trip back to some magical memories, and I'm so grateful that you guys all tuned in today. Tomorrow we have a very interesting show, 11 a.m. Pacific time. Kevin Miller directed a film called Hellbound, examining kind of the fundamentalist concepts of hell. Do people burn forever and ever and ever in the fire? And talked to all kind of people, well-known people, theologians, and really got into this, you know, theological controversy. Is hell real? Who goes there? And it's a fascinating documentary film, you know, examining this. So join us tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in. God bless each and every one of you until we are back together again tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your day. And thanks for sharing this Steeler show with us today.